to our meeting and our program this afternoon. I think you're going to be in for a real treat to hear Jay Bloom discuss some what he calls returnable, which is a wonderful concept, and I think we'll enjoy that. Before we do, I want to give a couple of acknowledgments out to individuals. This meeting happens to be Kathy McLaughlin's last meeting as a commissioner. She has elected not to renew or be used by us again. So, exactly. But I've known Kathy for a long time working in the aging community, and it's been a great pleasure to have her on board with us as a commissioner. And I will truly miss her as we go through our next year, which starts June 1st. So I would like to take this opportunity to give you a little something, which is a card and a gift certificate from
Thank
the commissioners.
You very much.
You're welcome, and hopefully you'll have cocktails and enjoy the food.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I also would like to give a little pamphlet over to Chuck, because I understand he's going to become a new little pet owner, and I want to make sure that he is knows about licensing your pet in Clark County. So, Chuck, here you go.
Take care of that?
Yes, I took care of that.
Oh. Well, I wanted you to be sure you had a pamphlet that would meet your needs there.
I don't want the pet full just taking him away.
That's funny.
Also, I would like to acknowledge some new commissioner members that we will be having coming on board June 1st, as well as some of our others. We actually had four slots open. Of that, two renewed with us, and luckily, and so we have four new members coming on board, which is Kirsten Ware will be renewing for another three-year term, and Patty will be renewing. And again, we've got new and used members coming back on board, which is great. We also have coming on board Dr. Ritchie, Bill Ritchie, who is here on the front seat, thank you, will be joining us in June 1st, as well as Scott Perlman. I knew the first name, forgot the last, I remember the last name, forgot the first, so you can tell this is an aging commission, absolutely. And again, thank you, gentlemen, for coming forth and trying to do service within your community. We certainly appreciate that, and we look forward to working with you the next 3 years. Thank you. Also, I wanted to offer a special acknowledgement to SWEEP. I don't know whether you're familiar with that group. It's Southwest Elder...
West Washington Elder Abuse Prevention Coalition.
They probably had one of the best fundraisers I've ever attended, and that was due to Lisa and Patty.
And our Bond girl.
And your Bond girl, Kirsten, over here. The theme was James Bond. I read the announcement wrong and thought it was a Bono event, so I went dressed as Bono out of U2. U2, I guess, is the group. U2. To say the least, it was a wonderful event and raised money for a good cause, and I want to thank you for doing that and sharing that with the community.
The only thing I want to add to that, Gary, is I think the event was a success despite Lisa and I. But we had a committee of about 10 to 12. It sort of fluctuated at times. We had an incredible group of people that pulled off in 4.5 months what organizations usually spend almost a year doing. And they will be reconvening in June to begin planning next year.
So. They were amazing.
They were amazing. Thank you very much. And again, I didn't realize it until the casino night that Patty is the chair of SWEEP. So again, thank you very much for your involvement. The Clark County Commission on Aging will be implementing a work plan and a prioritizing its projects and voting on that to today's meeting. It's a long process that we have worked very hard and very diligently toward, and I want to thank Bob Holdridge, one of our commission members, for his expertise and abilities in bringing those documents to the fruition that they are today, as well as the staff, which is Colette and Jackie. But out of that work plan, there are four key areas. One is executive committee, advocacy, awareness and education, project committees, and with that, the new thing for us will be the advocacy role, which will be partnering with other groups within the community to really work toward issues that are in the aging readiness plan. So we'll look forward to doing that in the next next year as well. I met with Commissioner Mielke on May 6th on our update of the commission. He was very complimentary and supportive of our efforts as Clark County Commission on Aging, and he is really excited to attend the joint Clark County Commission meeting and the Commission on Aging meeting, which is June 17th, 2014, here at 4:30 at this location. So I appreciate the commissioners and their support during our program. At that June 1st meeting, we'll also have our new and used commissioners reappointed, and we'll be doing that during that meeting. We had some great events happen within the last month since our April meeting. One is that the Clark County Commissioners on Aging was a bronze sponsor at the Expo 50 Plus Expo event. And the bronze member got to stamp these cards that looked like bingo cards. That was the best thing ever, because everybody had to come to our booth and get their card stamped, and we got to talk to them about the Commission on Aging. So that was great. I want to thank Lisa, Patty, Karen, Jackie, and Kim from the Fort Vancouver Library Association for helping us with assistance with that booth. We also did a survey on time banking, we got people to really think about what time banking was and is, and we'll talk a little more about that later on in our meeting. But we handed out probably about 150 surveys and got them back, and so that'll be a great tool for us to utilize in implementing that project within the next year. One thing that was different, I think, this year, and Lisa would probably agree, is the participants were more engaged in asking questions, and they weren't there just to receive the giveaways, which I thought was quite interesting, even though we had wonderful giveaways, which is a coin purse, and people really enjoyed them as well. Yesterday, Colette, Jackie, and I got to speak to the Joint Legislative Executive Committee in Olympia regarding the Commission on Aging, the Aging Readiness Task Force, and a few other events that we were doing here. The presentation presented a 4-minute video, which we've seen here before, which has to do with the python and the pig going through the system and how we're all aging and we're all going to be having to deal with those issues within the next several years. To say the least, I think we were probably a big hit with the video, with the commissioners, and because we weren't looking at analytical data, we weren't boring. So I think that we did a great job up there, and I personally want to thank Jackie and Colette for their expertise in putting together the presentation for us. What we discussed was implementing some ideas and concepts, which included time banking, shared housing, universal green design, the weatherization project, land use and zoning changes, the volunteer sidewalk program, the Accessible Transportation Coalition Initiative, and telehealth and telemedicine. There was excellent feedback and questions asked by the committee members, and I personally want to thank Representative Paul Harris, who is representing Clark County on that committee, for his assistance and his really compliments toward us as a Commission on Aging in Clark County in our endeavors to work with our aging population. Some future events will be the World Elder Abuse Day, which is June 5th. We have a recycled arts fair June 28th to June 29th, and when we have our board retreat on August 19th. So I want to thank everyone for their participation with all of our events and the planning of those, and I really appreciate that. We're going to move on to our open issues and talk a little bit about that right now as we await our speaker. And if he doesn't come in, you get to see a dog and pony show from us. So hopefully Jay is probably stuck in traffic. He's coming from Portland. So
can I make a motion?
Yes.
Make a motion to approve the agenda, approve the minutes of the last meeting.
You know, I skipped right over that, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It'll intervene.
That's what we call expertise in your area. Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Carries. Thank you very much, Bob, for bringing that to my attention. Okay, we'll go down to update. We will have an annual report out for review, or actually for presentation to the group in June. And we'll also be presenting that to the Clark County Commissioners. We'll also have our treasurer's report coming out at that point in time. I don't know whether you remember, but we have established a fund not tied to the Commission on Aging, but works with it, where we raise funds for some of our projects, and Kirsten is our treasurer for that, for the Commission on Aging. We've talked a little bit about some of the events coming up and doing that one. Do we have anything, Lisa, with the Recycled Arts Fair that you want to share with the group, or?
You have to come by the booth to see it. It'll be interactive for all ages. And the Arts Commission, Patty LaCroix is helping us with the Arts Commission to, we're going shopping at a recycled computer parts store. So we're bringing that back. And so the county is graciously giving us our booth. And we're going to be in the park this time.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be in the park. And of course, I am looking for volunteers to come and help. Patty and I will be there all day each day. We won't be in the dirt field. Woohoo! And it's, you know, we're going to have some stuff to hand out, and so will the Arts Commission. But Patty and I haven't decided if, because we don't know what we would do with it. If we have them, if we end up with a big painting or whatever that they make, is what do we do with it afterwards? You know, we could put it out here in the hall, I suppose. Or if we let them, kids, and take it. So we're not quite sure. Any thoughts? Any suggestions?
Good auction it off.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest, too.
And who am I auctioning it to?
Whoever wants to pay the highest money for
the
it.
Highest bidder.
At the event that day? Or at one of our upcoming events?
One of our upcoming events.
I'm all about that. Okay, cool.
I kind of thought about the library. Putting it up at the library, that would really get a lot of...
That would, yeah.
Well, true. The lady that, you know, with the light on the corner right there that has a big paper thingy, you haven't noticed it in the window when you go? It's huge. That's all out of recycled paper, and so she's bringing a miniature one with to come, and what her stages were for people to make one of those. So that'll be on display too.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Excellent.
So it'll be fun.
Great.
Looking forward to it.
So we're going to move into our strategic plan. We have been in the development stage and actually have finalized the plan. Not to say that we cannot make amendments after our commissioner retreat if the plan needs to be changed in any new shape, way, or form. So we can do that. So we've had a discussion in our work group, which met earlier, with regard to the strategic plan and the work plan. And so any comments from anybody, or?
I think Bob did an outstanding job, and he really put us to task. And
we should.
I'll end the conversation by saying, I make a motion to approve the plan.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay, so the work plan and the strategic plan were approved, and I certainly appreciate your time and effort on that, Bob, as well as the commissioners. And if you didn't see, we had the timeline. I did not have my coffee again this morning. So the timeline back on the back table for you guys to take a look at on that. So at this point,
if we're just stalling for time, I'll just make one really technical correction.
Yes.
Clark County is choosing to celebrate, or not celebrate, but make Elder Abuse Awareness Day June 5th. But the United Nations actually declared World Elder Abuse Day to be June 15th.
Okay.
So just... There, that was 20 seconds for you.
So we have, so if I'm understanding this correctly, we're celebrating it June 5th, but it's actually June 15th?
Correct.
Okay.
Unless we want to argue with the United Nations.
Not at all.
Patty?
Yes.
Is Clark County doing anything?
There is an event on June, is that correct? June 5th at the Lukey Center at...
I think it starts at 11.
I believe it's at 11.
That's right.
We'll get the information to Jackie and Colette so that can get on our website, so you can go to the Commission on Aging website and look for the date.
Is that part of the Friends for Elder Justice Center that they're
doing? It is.
Doing
they're the sponsoring organization, and it's at the Senior Center, very well attended. There'll be a dance. There are often state, local legislators and dignitaries, and the seniors get to talk to those folks, you know, in person, and also get to dance with them. So
good time will be had by all.
Yeah.
And last year's event was excellent, well attended, and it was kind of funny to see all of the elected officials out there trying to get people to dance with them, and a couple, they would not do it. So they went up to the ladies trying to do it, and they would not do it. So it's kind of interesting to see that.
Yeah, and we don't get to see our district attorney dancing very often, but
he does. No, you don't. Not at all.
So what do we do about returnment?
Okay.
Do we have a helicopter?
I was just informed there was a crash on I-5 North and only one lane is open. So what I think I will do is touch base a little bit on what Jay was going to be talking about this evening, which is returnment. And there is a paper and a website for Jay. Jay is out of Jay Bloom Anew. And if you go to his website, you'll be able to find a lot of material about him and the issues that he has done. Jay has also worked on the action plan for an age-friendly community, and that includes Portland, which was passed by the Multnomah for the city of Portland. And we will be looking at maybe Vancouver becoming one of those cities in the near future. He also worked on a state of active aging, which is a vision for Hawaii, which their governor and legislative passed and brought on to work within this vision that they had for 2020. And I kidded Jay a little bit and said I wished I got to go to Hawaii to work on this plan as well, but fortunately I did not get the invitation. But these documents are very well on his system. We have his slideshow presentation, don't we? Okay. I will do my best to fill in for Jay till he gets here. This is Jay's website, which is Bloom Anew. Jay has a lot of experience in working. He's been with, he was the executive director of the Morrison Center in Portland, as well as interim director for several organizations, which included the United Way in Portland. So he has a lot of background and expertise in building community and also taking that community and working with it. We also have a little video that we can show with regard to that. And we'll be doing that right now. Hopefully we can do it. There is no sound.
There's no sound. You're both right.
But we'll figure it out.
Oh, be careful. Yeah, but when it does come. Okay,
we're going to go elsewhere for that. The video is actually built upon the video that we saw with the python and the pig, and I think it's very important to see that.
I appreciate your patience. Next slide. Since we're not ready to do that, there actually is a great slide up there that has a past that has a little. Jay tends to like to do a lot of little comic strips. So this is, have you given much thought to what kind of job you want after you retire? I think that's where most of us are, especially the baby boomers of my age group, which is mid-50s. Is that once we get to the point where maybe we want not want to do the current job that we're in or our business field, that we want to do something else to be a truly advocate within the community or provide something of, to give back to the community. And I think that's what this is pointing out. Work after work is what it's called. And I think that probably there's lots of issues that we can do. And this one's kind of funny, is this isn't my vision of the golden years. And I can't tell you, one of my favorite checkers at Fred Meyer is two older women. I go to the back just to see them. And one of them is 71, and the other one's about 70 or 71 as well. It's great to see those individuals that interact with the intergenerational as well as being working like that. But in talking to them, I think part of the issue is that they're needing to support their income because they don't have enough income to live on. And so we've been talking a little bit about maybe going into Section 8 housing, looking at that, doing some things with healthcare, making it more affordable for them to do that as well. So I think that as your golden years come in, unfortunately, we do have individuals working in places like McDonald's and other service industries just because they need the money to survive within their life. And so as we retire, we hope we'll be able to do that. 59% see retirement as a time to be active and involved. That is majorly up percentage-wise from what it was a few years ago. I think if you asked my mother's generation, who was in her 80s, I think you would have saw a little different take on what retirement meant. To them, it was similar to what their parents and grandparents had done, which is once you reach a certain age, you don't do anything. You kind of just stay home, you kind of don't travel, you kind of don't do that. And that happens more in rural counties and more in rural settings, but sometimes those are important aspects to look at. 6 in 10 felt a responsibility that goes beyond their own life and their own family and seek meaningful helping other people. So we're finding that, especially as we work with the Human Service Council and some of those groups, that people are now interested in helping others, and older seniors to seniors seems to be a booming market for individuals, as well as tutoring and helping younger children. In time banking, for example, the Commission on Aging is looking at, it's an intergenerational bartering system that is set up in the country. It's very new to the U.S. It's probably been in here about 30 years, but very old in England and Europe. Part of that system says that, for example, if I have a skill and I want to utilize that skill, I can bank my hours, and then if I need services, I can pull someone that is willing to do it and bring those hours in to help me. I think what you're going to see is a lot more neighbor-to-neighbor doing things other than things like Red Cross, where everybody works within a group, but this would be if my neighbor needs help and needs to have her lawn mowed, and I have banking hours, I can donate those hours to my neighbor and have someone come mow her lawn, because I'm not great at mowing lawns. So I think that would be something that we can look at and how we're really trying to zone in as a Commission on Aging and work with that number two, which is making the person feel like they're needed and that they have meaning to help other lives. The other thing that we tend to find on the time banking issue is individuals that can tutor. So for example, if I have a child and I need tutoring, but there's a senior out here that's a retired educator, can help and do that. We can trade and barter, so it becomes more of a personalized service and volunteerism than it is volunteering for a large group. We don't mean to go in and to serve, you know, usurp the Red Cross in them, but people that do at the Red Cross, work at Red Cross, can bank those hours, and then they can give them away to other organizations, such as Habitat for Humanity, which someone might be willing to come in and do electrical work for them on a one-time basis for hours, but not work on the entire project. So I think we will be partnering with those individuals and really be complementing each other's services with that. Those that plan to work in retirement cite the desire to stay active and productive. When I visited with Jay and Colette and Jackie this last time, there is a program that Intel has, which is with their retired employees. If you say that you will work 2,500 hours per year for an organization, which roughly is about 20 hours per week, Intel will pay you $25,000 and pay 6 months of COBRA for you. So we are looking at some of those options to allow that, but I think we need to build upon that community support that we have from individuals such as Intel or companies such as Intel and utilize that program. But I had never heard of that until Jay mentioned that. And he actually was kind enough to give us the names of a gentleman here that has been doing that in the past that lives in Vancouver and is coming to an end of a project. So I think it's a great resource that anybody in the nonprofit world might want to use that. They can work for a nonprofit or a government agency. So Vancouver Housing might need that. So great. Majority of retirees and pre-retirees do not regard retirement as an extended vacation, but rather they see it as a new active stage of their life. If you guys remember the Python video that we had, it said, let's take a look at our life and move the timelines a little bit. So instead of us saying we're going to retire at 65, we might say we work till 72. So people are going to be looking at that range there and going, if I retire at 65, does that really mean I want to just quit doing work? Or do I want to expand that a little bit and work within an environment where I can give back to my community and be rewarded that way? So I think we'll see a little difference in how that is. It is about work, and I'll read the quote here from John Gardner. When people are serving, life is no longer meaningless. The cure for boredom is not diversion, it is to find some work to do, something to care about. This can certainly apply to many individuals, and I'll give you an example. One is, individuals that I work with, we work with the developing disabled community. And so it's amazing to me to see some of those that are higher functioning within the developing disabled community that actually work with ones that have more cognitive or deficits and help each other out all the time. And so, for example, one might be in a wheelchair and the other one might be pushing it doing that. They build those bonds, but I think that when you take a look at community, you have to take a look that we all can be involved in it and doing small things. We're tired of playing, we want to work. So this is the Wakong strip up there. The new trends in the boomer's third age, which is what he's talking about, is that retirement thing on the chart that we said we're going to be retiring maybe at 71. We might be retiring at 65. We might retire at 68. Something along that. We're going to use our knowledge and skills. We're going to take our assets more productively. We're going to have a better balance between work and leisure. And we're going to find meaning and passion and give back, which is called retirement. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to say the goal for active aging is that we return back to the community the areas that we have. And there's Jay. Well, I've been filling in your shoes, and oh, thank God.
What have I been saying?
Well, not much is all I can tell you. Not much all day.
Take a seat and enjoy the presentation.
I'll be good at Q&A, though.
I've known Jay for a long time, so it's a pleasure to have him here. I already did the introductions for you. I told them everything to do with it.
Hi, Jay.
How are you? Good to see you.
I'm on.
Can you stand or where you are?
You can do whatever you want to do. This is our group, so I will turn it over to the true authority.
And tell me how long I get to go. So I'll get
you've
park.
Got till 6 o'clock.
Well,
so, just shoot the bull. Is all I have to say.
Where's the control on the slides?
Right here.
you just yell over Colette. She'll be happy to
so
do
it. So go back to show me what we've covered already.
Well, not much.
Oh, you got a few of those. Okay. All right, you go back then. Go back to where we were. Right there. Stop them. Okay. So, I start off in Portland at 3:30.
Yeah.
From the Lloyd Center, I think I had plenty of time. And for those that ever crossed that bridge, I got to give you the circuitous route on how I got here. Even now, it amazes me. So I'm getting on the Lloyd Center, thinking I'm going to merge right in, and it's a parking lot. And I'm thinking, oh my God, how am I going to get across? So I end up taking the 405 South Fremont Bridge and think I'm going to go 205. So maybe I come across that way. Well, that's all backed up. I finally go off downtown, go across on Belmont. Gary, you remember your old neighborhood.
Yes.
On Belmont on 33rd and go all the way out to Columbia and then get on that way. And it's a mess. It reminds me a little bit of my own approach to planning in life. On my left-hand side, it's God helps those who help themselves. But then on the right hand, it's when man plans, God laughs.
Exactly.
Or as my son, who's in the military, refers to it, he says, it's like the general say, when the plans go out the window the first time the shot's fired. It doesn't mean you don't plan. But you better react to the ground or you won't survive. And to some degree, that's a little bit about aging. Because you want to be intentional about this process, but you better damn well react to the reality as it unfolds. So, Gary, did you explain the slide, or you just were trying to take it out?
No, I tried to explain pulling things out of the air.
So, if there's nothing else you remember about my talk, this slide really kind of captures it. Because the boomers, as an age cohort, are the first age cohort that are going to have this experience of this slide. And typically, the old metaphor, the old paradigm for aging was you reached age 60 and you felt lucky if you had any healthy years before you died. And it was a combination of the previous generation had a lot more hard labor and less kind of immunizations. A whole variety of factors. And there's always been a few outliers, like Jimmy Carter is an outlier in the sense of his generation of still going strong in these 80s. But the boomer generation, this group from 1964 to 1946, is the first age cohort that are going to be giving these extra years of healthy living. And that's what this slide starts to see. It's a fancy term for you reach age 60 now as a man or a woman in good health, and your odds are you're going to live another 25 to 30 years of healthy living. Now, obviously, not all make it. And I just had a close cobweb in mind. At age 59, you might have read the paper, Wyatt Starnes passed away. Not all will make it by any stretch of the imagination. But the 78 million boomers as an age cohort are the first to be given this. Subsequent generations will also have it unless they change their health habits significantly. And my granddaughter, who just turned 17, about to go off to college, when she was born 17 years ago, and said if a girl that age was born, likelihood she'll live to 100. So the longevity of future generations also is continuing here. What do we do with that era, with that healthy and productive aging, is the big question for you to think about. of active aging. There's a term called active life expectancy. It's another more fancy word for, if you want to really throw people off at a cocktail party, it's a term called compression of morbidity. Does anybody know what that means?
Say that again.
That's right. Compression of morbidity. And basically what that is every one of us in the room want it. So you go home to your spouse or partner and say, I'm into compression of morbidity. And what it means is active life expectancy. The time between your death and any illness or chronic disease is very small. My favorite phrase to capture that, and I've been married 43 years, is that I want to live to 101 and be killed by a jealous husband. Picture the image? So whatever magical age you think you want to live to, oftentimes the best would say, I want to live to whatever that age is, 85, 90, 95, and die in my sleep. Now, who gains with compression morbidity or active life expectancy?
Everyone.
Everyone benefits, because I benefit as an individual. If I get it, it's the way I want to go. My family benefits. There's not a long period of caregiving, etc. If I'm on a Medicare or Medicaid or a corporate health plan, they benefit. And if I'm able to stay engaged in the community in a variety of ways, they benefit. So we all aspire to active life expectancy. And so one of the things that I work on, both here in Oregon and Hawaii and some other places, is how do we enhance active life expectancy? Because we know in gerontology, about 35% of your aging is based on your genetics. You can't do a darn thing about it. Another third is based on your lifestyle. Cigarettes, smoking, diet, exercise, sleep, drugs in moderation, the alcohol. So it's a kind of lifestyle thing. But the other third, and the key one you guys should be involved in, and I know you are doing this because I've read your plan, is the last third, and that's the engagement part, the reason to live longer. And now we've come to the stage of life, and it's a new stage of life, an extension of middle age rather than an extension of old age. What do we do with that? One of the challenges we have in this country, and I'm old enough to remember this, when I was studying psychology 40 years ago, the only thing that they shared with us was what I called abnormal psychology. It was psychosis, neurosis, borderline, personality disorders. My God, as you read through this thing, you know, you start looking at all your family members, you thought they're all crazy. It's kind of like, you know, when you read about physical illness, you think, I think I got that. Well, 40 years later, the fastest growing area in the study of psychology now is something called positive psychology, or well-being. 40 years ago, when we did community development, we focused on what are the deficits of communities. 40 years later, now we know the best approach is to build on the strengths of a community. What are their assets? 40 years ago, when people with disabilities, it was about what they couldn't do. Now we know 40 years later, just because you have a disability doesn't mean you can't be a productive, engaged person. In fact, someone from the disability community said to me, we all have disabilities, just someone hasn't discovered it yet. Think about that one. Aging in this country, at the federal level, Old Americans Act, state level, local level, and in our media, is one of the last areas in the country that's based on a deficit model, not a strengths model. So that's one of our major challenges with ageism, et cetera, that it's based on a deficit area. And you still see it even to this day, whether you approach it from an employer standpoint, a community planning standpoint, or even as an individual standpoint. So part of the challenge for your group, this group, I don't know what audience does. You got stuck in traffic too, I guess. Is to look at how do you build on the strengths of the older adult population that you have in the community to a great extent. All right, let's do another slide. You've been sick of looking at that thing. So this is one of my favorite quotes. It's mine. Because gets back to that third area that I said in terms of active life expectancy, is when I run into an older person now, I say, how do you want to be engaged in the world? And engagement, in this case for me, is kind of what the work of older adults are. Back at, again, that 40 year ago, Sigmund Freud stuff, when they asked him about what led to happiness, he said it was half of it was work and half of it was love, work and love. Right? So I'm going to show you a chart later on. So this is a slide I wanted to show you in terms of being building on the strengths. This comes a little bit out of a World Health Organization effort on how to become an age-friendly city. And I don't know if you're aware, but Mountain Portland's working on trying to do that. New York City is, and a few others in Vancouver may want to pursue that, what that means. And it's got a whole lot of interesting details to it. Maybe during the Q&A, I can come back to that. Anybody familiar with Bridge Meadows, by the way, take credit? Mm-hmm. A couple of you are. What do you know about it?
We know we're going to go visit them.
Huh?
We know we're going to go visit them.
Oh, you are?
Intergenerational.
Huh?
Intergenerational.
So let me tell you about it, because I was on the founding board of that. That's one of the things, by the way, when you get older, you get lots of volunteer opportunities. It's amazing how many volunteer things you can do. So this was a board I was asked to be on by a woman who used to work for me, but I actually had a paid job. I don't know, Gary, you did an introduction or what?
I just said a couple of things, but okay. I said you were more.
Okay, well, I came out to work in 1993. From the East Coast, and head up a children's mental health organization called Morrison Child and Family Services. And Morrison, by the way, was Oregon's first child guidance study and was founded by Oregon's first child psychiatrist, followed by the name of Carl Morrison. I think I told you this story, Gary, much I can't remember. But Carl grew up in Winterset, Iowa, and I don't know how many of you have seen the movie Bridges of Madison County. That's Winterset, Iowa. And if you were to go back to Winterset, Iowa, you would see that it's birthplace of a very famous American, and that was Carl Morrison's first cousin. Carl grew up there and then went on to medical school. Iowa came out to Oregon in 1945. His first cousin ended up going to Southern California. He played for the Trojans, USC, and then went into movie stunt acting, where later he changed his name from Marion Robert Morrison. Does anybody know?
John Wayne.
John Wayne.
Really?
Smart group. So I love it whenever I watch a John Wayne movie, I think his first name is Marion. You have a different look when you see that name attached to it. Anyway, the woman that worked for me there was a child psychologist who now runs Bridge Meadows, when she got hired to be director of that, asked me to join the board, and they're going to take these foster children from Oregon who are ready for adoption, and then place them in homes who are ready to adopt them, and then elders would provide some volunteer thing. And Dorinda was framing it primarily as a children's program. Look what we're doing for these wonderful foster children in Oregon. And I said to Dorinda and to the board at that time, we were building the case, we're going to try to raise $12 million, so a small amount when you start to think about, dollars. And I said, you know, it's great, but we're going to do it for these foster kids. But there's a lot of good children's programs in town, and it's not going to be that distinctive. There are a lot of programs for children. I said, the power of this program is when it opens, and it opened 2 years ago, is you're going to have a hard time deciding who benefits more, the children, the families, or the elders. And when you go visit it, I hope you do go visit, you will see, by the way, the elders are Section 8 housing eligible, which basically means they're low-income elders. So don't have the image of this being a very affluent group. They're folks who are struggling. And you will see that they're getting as much benefit out of this process as the children are, as well as the families. And, you know, that's one of the secrets about active life expectancy, is staying engaged. So I love this one. I don't know how many of you know Lily Tomlin. She's always got an interesting approach on things. We're all in this together alone. So one of my favorite quotes, and I don't know if any of you visited my website, but I have 500 of my favorite quotations organized by category. So if you're ever looking for a good quote on purpose, leadership, children, death, dying, humor, this is from the humor section. It's one of my favorites by Einstein. It says, all theories are wrong, but some are useful. So everything I'm going to be telling you today is wrong, but it may be useful. So one of my theories is that in this new stage of life, this extension of middle age that I described for you, is that it's a little bit like my granddaughter when she goes off to college. You say, well, in what way? Well, when a kid goes off to college or leaves the home for the first time, maybe go off to the service, whatever, they have two major challenges. The first challenge is, who am I? What's my identity now that I'm not a primary part of my family? I was with my granddaughter last night. She's been off to college in the fall. I can see she's already starting to separate from her mother and her father. And I wasn't into a whole lot of nostalgia. I was into nostalgia, thinking about how fast the time had gone. The second question a kid has to answer when they leave the family or go to college or whatever is, what's my work? What am I going to major in? I mean, a kid gets that asked ad nauseum the first couple of years. What's your major? What are you going to work in? Well, my theory in this new stage of life is that somewhere between 55 and 75, these questions often resurface again in this way. You've raised a family. You may have lost a loved one. You may have gone through a divorce. You may have changed your jobs. And now this question emerges again. Who am I? What's my primary identity? Much more informed this time by a sense of mortality. Probably lost some loved ones along the way. And then the second question people have to answer is, how am I going to be engaged in the world? And just like those college kids, where a million kids are going through the same two questions at the same time, you have older adults going through that. In fact, in this region of 2 million people, 25% are 50 or older. And yet, similar to that Lily Tomlin quote, nobody can give them the answer. They have to come up with those two things themselves. And so I refer to that as one part, the inner work, the inner reflection, and then the external work is, how do I want to be engaged in the world? They are, there's no templates for them. This new stage of life, there's no paths necessarily. Each person has to answer it themselves. If you were, we were talking about financial investing, I would say if you want to be a conservative investor, I could give you a model for that. Or if you wanted to be an aggressive investor, I could give you a model. But how you want to live these extra years, there is no model. You may have neighbors and other groups that do various things, everything from, I'm going to buy a piece of land in Costa Rica and retire there, do I want to start a new business or whatever? But the reality is each person has to come up by themselves. And if they have a loved one or a partner along the way, now it's a couple having to decide that. And by the way, the fastest growing divorce rate in the country is 16 over. And you say, what the heck's that all about? Well, old paradigm, couple like my age gets to 60. I've been married a long time, saying, hell, why? I've only got a few more years to live. Why change now? New paradigm? I work with some clients who say, they reach their 60s and say, I don't want to grow old with this person. And they're changing. If I got 25, 30 more years, I've kind of done my thing with this person. And so that's a growing divorce rate. That's what people say about. So here's another wrong theory that may be useful. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with Maslow, but he was an old psychologist and had this idea of a hierarchy of needs. And so I took this kind of principle and said, we're going to describe this as, what are the work of older people? Okay, in a hierarchy. Okay, push it. This is the first one. So the first one, I call it the body work, is physical. Because no matter how much money you have in the world, if you don't have your health, you haven't got anything, right? We've all learned this in our own way. Things that are involved in health, what the next one yet? Well, that's fine. The further things in the bottom are the usual suspects are exercise, diet, rest, all that moderation. I call that body work or physical work. Next one. So even if you have that, the next level up of needs are finances or the basic security efforts. I call that the livelihood work. And that's your housing and finance and whatnot. It's pretty hard if you're not worried about your next meal, even if you've got your health, to worry about other needs. So this is the important one. I refer to as love work or emotional work or the importance of your network of family, friends, etc. As somebody, by the way, I did Interim United Way a couple of different times. So I've been in the human service world for almost 40 years, and I would tell you the number one risk factor for any group, whether it's poverty, domestic violence, child abuse, elders, is isolation. Number one risk factor. And so older adults who isolate themselves or are isolated are a big risk factor. So having some kind of a network and relationships of support, really, really key. Next one. So this is an area I call this leisure work, mental work, one of the areas that we're finding out in brain science. Again, old paradigm. The thought was you got reached age 60 and your brain started to go downhill. Guess what we're finding in brain science now, that you can grow new synapses right until the day you die. And so you see an explosion of all these brain games, Sudoku and puzzles and whatnot, and it's to grow the synapses. Now, if that doesn't motivate you just from the sense of lifelong learning, one of the things you're going to motivate you quite a bit is before long you're going to see the research that by using your brain, it'll help be a prophylactic against dementia and Alzheimer's. You know, the old phrase of use it or lose it, that's going to apply to the brain. So lifelong learning now is starting to become really, really important. So I can talk to refer the next one up is passion work or connection using, and work in this case for me, I mean both paid and unpaid. And men particularly have a hard time with this in the sense of if we're not paid, we don't sometimes think it's real work. In my experience, women have figured out a long time ago just because you don't get paid doesn't mean it's not important real work. But in this case, I'm not always referring to paid work, I mean engagement. Variety of stuff, and I think I read somewhere you might be thinking about a time bank or something like that. That could fall very much into this area of using, being passionate, being creative, using some of your gifts and skills. Next one. And then the highest one up where you get into this kind of the spiritual soul work, purpose, meaning, kind of legacy you want to leave. And some of my coaching clients, I say, at this stage of life, it's not what are you able to do, because you're able to do a variety of things and skills and whatnot. The tougher question than what are you able to do is what do you want to do. But if you want an even deeper question, reflect on, it's not what are you able to do or want to do, what are you meant to do? Which gets into that calling, vocation, with what few years you have in your life. Next slide. So another lovely time, I love the quotes. Always knew when to be somebody, but didn't know how to be specific. By the way, a slide, one of her quotes, one of my favorites that I didn't put up there, I don't know why you got to talk about the Tom tonight, was she says, reality can be quite stressful, especially if you're in touch with it. and I felt that a lot being on the bridge coming over tonight, particularly as Mother Nature, I drank that last bottle of water about an hour ago. So, I mentioned to you about there's no template for investing in your time going forward. This is a model that we some of you may have heard of a program that was started a few years back at Portland Community College called Life by Design. And this was a slide that we kind of figured out that people who tend to flunk their later years are people who think of one thing. Now, top three things people say when they're going to retire. You know what the top three things are? One, I'm going to travel. Two, I'm going to spend time with my kids or grandkids if I'm lucky to have them. And three, recreate. Guess what happens? One, travel. Sooner or later, they have to come home. Two, if they have grandkids or children and lucky to have them, they only want so much of your time. They have their own lives to live. Three, recreating. Really only works if it's a part of a larger portfolio of time. So I don't care whether your passion is gardening, sailing, golfing, whatever. If it's the only thing you do all day, you'll go crazy. And yet people have. So there's what this I often refer to in this new stage of life. People, and I almost predict this, by the way. I bet you can come up with friends that are in this category. Somewhere between 6 months and 2 years after they retire, they do the honey-do list. They do one of those three things I just described, and then they come up for air and say, holy crap, I've got 25, 30 more years of this. What's next? And they have what I refer to as unplanned sabbaticals. They've taken that break, they decompressed, and now they go, what the heck is next? I've actually had female clients who engage me for their husbands and say, find something for him to do. He's sitting home all day in his sweatsuit. I married him for life, but not for lunch. You'll hear them say. So, one of the secrets that I use in modeling when thinking about this extra stage of life, and you think of the elders in your community, is to start to think of a portfolio of time where you spend, be intentional, back to that intentionality, where you kind of look around and say, okay, where am I in spending my time somewhat on this wheel? And you can make your own up if you don't think these are the right categories. But one of the mistakes that people make in their financial investing that you hear fairly often is they don't diversify enough. That's true when you come to these later years. With people think it get too more narrow in their thinking. So I think about being intentional and where my time is going in these various areas. The second mistake that people tend to make, similar to financial investing, is they diversify but then they never rebalance. So you can find that you get more out of whack in one of these areas over time. So if you think again, I got 20, 30 more years. Well, if you were age 20 and now you're age 50, that's a lot of living in that time. And generally it wasn't one thing. So you can come up with a life plan that works 2 or 3 years, maybe 3 or 5, but then you find you need to rebalance. Okay, next slide. There's on my website a very good report that you can download that I worked with Ted Wheeler when he was county chair on, called a Task Force on Vital Aging. And this was a report that looked at what were best practices for engaging older adults in both employment and civic engagement. And I wanted to make sure you knew it as a resource because it won a national award back in 2008 for counties in terms of aging. And I think you would find a lot of it's still valuable today. It was primarily written from the employer's point of view on why they're concerned about their aging in the workforce. I got next. A couple of things that came out of that I wanted to highlight for you because you kind of work within the civic environment was the importance of changing language. Now maybe it won't come as a surprise to this group, I don't know, but believe it or not, the boomers particularly don't ever think of themselves as seniors. In fact, senior centers all across the country now are in the process of looking at changing their name because they're realizing that the boomer generation is not thinking of these places as resources for them. And so language matters. You know, I reminded my late father, he was in like 82, and he would deliver meals on wheels to what he thought were the old people. elderly isn't big either in this particular group. Elder works, older adult, tours, seasoned, experienced, those are all words that people tend to relate. But if you start referring to elderly volunteering or senior volunteering, people generally think of somebody older as 10 years older than what they are. have a great story with my mother on this, who's 89. My father died 4 years ago. They had been married 60 years. I have three younger sisters that are back east with her. And it's not surprisingly, after my father died, she could only live so long alone in her house. And it came to some point in time where we need to get her to a continuing care facility. And in these continuing care facilities, were a good one, et cetera, but it had a roommate. And the roommate was 9 years old. And my mother kept saying, "Well, she's so old." And my sisters were trying to convince my mother, "Well, she's only 3 years older than you." But she had this view that 90 was so much older than what she was. And the woman, quite frankly, was just as mobile as my mother was at age 90, but she had it in her head that, One of the challenges for nonprofits in working with older adults is, or any volunteer for that matter, is they don't pay the upfront costs of managing folks well. And the way I describe working with older adults or volunteers is that whatever good HR practice is what is best with volunteers. And you think about what we know about good HR practice, it's you recruit well, you have a good job description or project description, you have a good orientation, provide good training, good supervision, you evaluate, and you terminate if appropriate. Too often, in nonprofits, they think about putting people into fund development, write a check or work on a fundraising event, whatever, there are a variety of other avenues. The number one motivation for older adults is not always money, in the nonprofit sector at least. I'm not going to try to convince you in any way, shape, or form that many older adults aren't going to have to work in their later years. But when they come to the nonprofit sector, they're not always, or the civic sector, not always thinking this number one motivation is money. It can often be a variety of other, think of that chart. Next slide. So here's a continuum that I often suggest for people to think about. It's kind of from a fully compensated traditional model to more of contractor, consultancy with stipend, alternative ways of reimbursing people. And not necessarily use the word volunteer, it's just about work. I mentioned earlier that men particularly sometimes struggle with the word volunteer. They don't think it's as important as other kinds of work. But they're going to see a range of way people can be compensated. There's a fellow that works for an organization over across the river. They give him a bus ticket every month, and he does a certain amount of hours of bookkeeping. Another one is given a stipend of a couple hundred dollars. I had foster parents that we would give $1,000 a month to take care of some of the toughest kids that you could imagine. They weren't employees, they weren't volunteers. So there's a variety of ways that people can start to think about compensation. Again, a good barter system, timeshare, is a form of compensation in a creative way. So the major paradigm shift here is moving from older adults as being a problem. We're always talking about their needs, and see them more as problem solvers, seeing less as clients and more as contributors. And moving from, I think within the next 5 to 10 years, you won't even have this word retirement used anymore. It's fastly becoming out of whack. Again, the vast majority of older adults are going to have to work in their later years, and those that don't have to are going to want to, just to stay engaged in a variety of ways. And final one, rather than seeing older adults as an at-risk population, see them more as a community asset to be valued and cultivated. So is there anything else on that I want to grab? You're welcome to use the slides or share them with other folks. One of the features of the Age-Friendly City effort that I wanted to draw your attention is that older adults are one of their assumptions internationally is how a community treats older adults is the best barometer of how age-friendly a community is. And you say, why? Well, if you get good sidewalks that work for an older person, they work well for people with disabilities, they work well for baby carriages, they work well for skateboards and bicycles. It's the only age group that actually works that way. It doesn't necessarily work the other way. So they become good barometers or litmus tests or canaries in the mine shaft on how age-friendly a community is. Just like, no, next one, I'll forget this. You've heard that one already. I like this one. Yeah, back again to the Bridge Meadows model, that is, the key is intergenerational stuff. You know, the number one area older adults want to volunteer or be involved with is children. I'm still a big believer in the grandparenting instinct. And when I see my wife hold our granddaughter, it's hard to say who benefits more, right? Any of you that have seen that experience. And so any way you can help cultivate, I believe, intergenerational relationships, you've got a great opportunity. No, that one. I think there's one last one. That's one. That's my last slide. If you were Irish, probably, you know what I mean by that one. So, had a lot more fun that way. So, Q&A, Gary. Questions, other thoughts? Try to give you something.
If you have slides that I try to present, you have questions on that, please ask. Interpretation.
Yes.
Well, I'm very interested in your thoughts about how do we as an organization, a group, connect with us boomers?
Uh-huh.
Because we're not old, like you said, and we're not going to get old.
Yeah.
And we just keep going on and on. We're here trying to represent and work for them, you know, and create awareness and all of that. But at the same time, whenever we're trying to say, yes, okay, we're here, well, they're saying, well, yeah, I'm not old. I'm not a senior. No, I love the senior thing. No. No.
Right.
It's kind of like, I'm not bald.
Well, there are a couple of challenges to that. I'll come at it. One is, it reminds me of a lunch I was having not too long with a colleague who was 65 and still running an organization. And he said to me, you know, I had a really hard problem turning 65. And I said, why, Dennis? And he said, it's not because I'm eligible for Social Security now or Medicare. And I'm planning to work at least 5 more years. He says, the problem was, I remember my dad when he was 65, and he was a very old man. So one of our challenges, like Pogo said, the enemy is us. We don't, I can't begin to tell you how many meetings I'm in, not unlike this, that isn't necessarily organized around older adult stuff, community number, community development, whatever, and they're talking about older folks, and I have to remind people in the room, it's us. Because if people have in their image, it's them. It's us. So that's one thing, that's one of the challenges that we have, is to get back toward our paradigm or what we think folks are. The second is, it's such a large cohort of people, and I think it was one of the points I made on one of the slides, you just know one size fits all. You have, it used to be, if you had a 60-year-old man or woman, you could pretty much assume they were all kind of going through the life cycle about the same way. Now you can run into a 60-year-old who's got grandchildren. You can run into a 60-year-old just starting their family. You can run into a 60-year-old who's fully retired. You can run into a 60-year-old who's starting a new business. You can run into a 60-year-old who's climbing Mount Everest. You got one who's struggling with a chronic disease. So the sheer variety and how large it is makes it also difficult to decide what part do you want to particularly. So that's one of the challenges of organizations, both governmental and senior center, when we start trying to think strategically, who are we going to serve? Because there's so many different aspects to it that make it difficult. So that would be a couple of responses to your question. Yes?
So at Bridge Meadows, I'm curious. I've been reading up and I got about children that are taking care of their grandparents.
Uh-huh.
There's no sandwich. There's 10, 12-year-old going to school, coming home and taking care of a very handicapped, for whatever reason. So, yeah, I know that Bridge Meadows is about fostering and stuff, but have you started to see any of that population in the Portland area where, I mean, it's reported in the nation that there's over 1.5 million of these kids every day taking care of their grandparents. Their biggest fear is not to do their homework is that they're going to be alive when they come home. So these kids, to me, will fall into the foster program after the grandparents are dead. So I'm curious if you've seen any of that.
Well, again, you have all sorts of variety of new living arrangements. One of the things that we're taking a look at across the river is the sheer variety of different kinds of housing now for older adults. So you're seeing an upsurge of not just the kind of Bridge Meadows, but co-housing, intergenerational housing, shared housing. I don't know if it's in this county. Have you heard about the Villages movement? Is that getting over here? Which is, again, trying to help people kind of age in community. I don't like really the phrase age in place, because again, it has somewhat of a sense of isolation. I like the warmer feeling to me is how you age in community, because part of the Villages movement plus is that it creates a community and an engagement process. So I think for a variety of reasons, both cost of living, the displacement of work, et cetera, you're seeing much more generations living together in a variety. Except for dwelling units, I don't know if that's hit over here, EDUs, but it's this idea of building, they used to be called granny flats, but many of them are good for students who come back and other kids who can't leave the nest.
Challenges that I think we all face when we're engaged in this kind of endeavor is trying to find a way to communicate with community members, particularly the 40 and 50 year olds, to let them know that there are resources out there so that they don't have to reinvent the wheel when they have an elderly parent who needs assistance of some kind. Because if you wait until you're in a crisis mode, that is not the time that is best suited for jumping on the internet to try and find resources. How do you spread the word?
Yeah, again, it's a matter of having real conversations as much as you can in a variety of places. One of my favorite phrases is, not all boomers had kids, but all boomers have parents. And you'd be hard pressed to go in any group and not find that somebody's dealing with a caregiving issue. And I think, you know, sometimes you can't feel they're the only ones that are dealing with that. So part of it is to, you know, be open about it, share those struggles. In other words, back to the John Wayne stuff, you know, there's still too much of an ethic in this country to go on. You know, kind of, you know, his name was Marion. You know, the ethic was I did it all by myself. And I think as we move into this new era, we're going to have to lean in a lot more to community and to each other. And one of the ways you do that is talking about real challenges and real difficulties.
I would contribute just a point around really encouraging using the word multi-generational instead of intergenerational.
Okay.
Because it is more inclusive. Exactly what you're talking about. It's what Karen's talking about. It brings more people into the mix, and who knows?
Multi works for me.
Right. That's what I think.
So, for those that might not have heard, multi-generational is the term that we've been using because we feel it's more encompassing within the community. And we had, as a commission, had a huge, not a huge, we had a very good discussion about the word intergenerational versus multi.
I've been flying them all to hear that.
It was a huge discussion.
It was, girlfriend, and you were.
I'm okay with either one. It's the interdependence for me is the key part.
That's
interdependence. You know, again, one of the things is somebody who's worked in philanthropy for a lot of years, one of the things I still find amazing is is that when a person volunteers, whether it's at the soup kitchen, or reads to a kid, or goes on a mission to Haiti, and it's the first time, what do you hear more than anything else back? They say, I got more out of this than what I gave.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you start wondering, well, who's the helper, who's the helpee? We kind of walk around on our heads with that. And, I was having lunch with a woman who has MS just last week, and she was telling me about a woman who was relatively paralyzed, but one of her things that she did every week was a group of elementary students would come in and she would give them a lesson on history.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, if you're able to be bedridden and struggle with MS and still be able to have that exchange, who was benefiting?
Right.
You know, as much as they both were.
Do we have any questions from the audience that you'd like to ask?
Did we keep you awake?
We've got a million of them.
Huh?
We've got a million of them. One of my questions would be, is my experience that it's challenging to, because that cohort is so broad and it's so significantly different if somebody grew up in the 60s or in the 70s, late 70s, early 60s,
right.
Bill Clinton to somebody who's 50 years old, totally
sure.
Different life experience.
Right.
And so it seems like to engage people, for instance, in their 50s, a lot of times they do not want to relate to that 60-plus thing
mm-hmm.
for fear they'll
yes.
catch it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the question is, how do you engage those, which really gets back to the kind of thing that you're asking.
Well, I think part of what I would say is multi-generational opportunities. Not necessarily make them as age segregated, but more of, community. I also, one of the other things I volunteer on is a statewide group in Oregon looking at, it's called the Center for Innovative Schools. And one of the things we're looking at is what do the schools of the 21st century look like? And for the most part, one of the answers is they're community centers. You know, they're no longer just places
mm-hmm.
for kids with lifelong learning and whatnot. You can't afford to have a school building be 180 days part-time. Capital costs. And so with the aging of communities, there'd be more multi-generational locations. So they may use the computer labs kids in the day, but then at nighttime, they're also used to have more mutual mentoring going on. So I think there's a variety of opportunities to create community engagement of all ages. That would be my encouragement.
I think the other challenge, I think, and it could be just because of the blip in history where we are right now, but I run into so many 58-year-olds, 59-year-olds, 60-year-olds who, for whatever reason, no longer have a job.
Right.
And so they're saying, nobody wants to hire me. Now what the heck am I supposed to do?
Right.
And it is a huge challenge.
Oh, it's again.
That and so many of the stuff, I was talking with Friedman about that one day, about the fact that so much of the stuff that comes out for this age group is designed not for Joe Sixpack, it's designed for the person who works at Intel. Well,
yes.
How about this humongous majority of the population that is not that?
Right.
They're not going to get a $25,000 stipend for putting
right.
in 20 hours.
Well, you're familiar with that model, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I estimate anywhere between 65 and 70% of older adults are going to have to work in their later years. We have a whole lot of challenges on that culturally and in organizational. And I work with employers a lot because, one of the ironies, I mentioned that task force on vital aging, we did that in 2007, 2008, when many of the employers were worried about an aging workforce. And then the recession hit and it almost like went away. Well, it's coming back really, really strong now. When you use this, I'll give you just a couple of statistics. When you hear a number like 10,000 a day in the U.S. are turning 65, and are going to be doing that for the next 15 years, 10,000 a day, there's not that same amount coming into the workforce. So even if you're able to retain some of those of that 65 and above in the workforce, we're still going to be facing a huge labor shortage. And I don't care whether you're a government employer, a for-profit employer, or a nonprofit, we're going to be facing the workforce. And it's not still my biggest concern, given our age in the room. The millennium generation has a lower college graduation rate than the boomer generation. And it's the first time in human history that a subsequent generation is going to be less educated than previous. So you not only have the number challenge coming out of the workforce, you got a less skilled workforce coming in. And so employers, believe it or not, this is what I tell the 58 and 59-year-olds, I know it's hell to be patient with it, but at some point they're going to be knocking on your door trying to figure out how you can get back in. And too often, as we do in this country, we wait until the pain and crisis occurs before. And so there are a number of enlightened employers that are realizing they can't, they're trying to maintain relationships with older workers and not just give them the golden handshake and say goodbye. I'll give you just an example to highlight. I don't know if you've heard of CH2Ville Engineering, but it's a major national company, and one of their folks retires there. They ask them whether they want to stay involved either on project work, part-time work, or whatever, because they know there'll be projects that work that will emerge, so they don't have their existing workforce. Old model before, goodbye, wish you well. And any employer today is going to want to keep connected with former employees. For, it doesn't have something to recruit talent going forward. But no, there's no question that that's, there's all sorts of data that says that the older worker, when they become unemployed, stay unemployed longer. And it's hellacious.
I think the one thing that scares me the most about that and learned about it in school is, you know, how the pyramid is going to turn upside down is the trade work that's not being learned, you know, carpentry and electrician and all of that. You know, everybody thinks that, you know, the world is all high tech, but when you stop and look around, who's going to build the furniture that you're going to eat off of and the structure that you're going to live in and the roads that you're going to drive on? And, you know, in my era, we had trade schools. You know, if you didn't do well in school, your dad stuck you in a trade school and you learned a trade, and that was just how it is, and you built America. And that, for me, is one of the biggest worries, is how those generations are just going to take care of their infrastructure, just, you know, repairing and doing that thing and providing. You know, the techies are always going to be here, but even the techie jobs are going to run out,
right.
You know? And I think people of our era, the baby boomers, we get knocked a lot by the younger, by the millennials and others, because we aren't as techie as they are. But, you know, I would rather have one of my fellow boomers next to me out in the woods when I needed to learn how to do something or grow something or whatever, than one of the little techie guys because he couldn't hook up with the Wi-Fi, and that's not going to feed me or give me any food.
What?
What are you doing with something?
It depends on what you're growing. Well, we're out of time, and so I want to really thank Jay for coming.
Yes,
and
so much.
Perseverance.
And do I have what do we have?
This.
What are we supposed to do with that? Okay, I'm getting a sign. So do I have a motion to approve work plan?
You got it.
Yeah. Didn't we do that already though earlier?
We did that.
Hold on, we did it already when you were out of the
strategic plan.
No, and the work plan.
He said both.
He did
both.
Okay.
Yeah, we did that. Okay. I was going to say,
I
could be doing that. Okay, so yes,
Jeff. I have the privilege of one last story.
Sure.
I learned this from my granddaughter, speaking of the tech thing. So a few years back, when she was like a freshman or sophomore in high school, I noticed she wasn't responding to my emails when I'm emailing. So I get hold of my daughter, and I say to my daughter, you know, my granddaughter's response, I said, Dad, if you want to call your granddaughter, you're going to have to text her.
That's right.
Right.
I said, you know, we might want, you know, my wife and I don't want texting on our phone. That's an extra charge. You know, you want to talk to your granddaughter, she says. I said, yes, I'll add texting to it. Well, then I figured out later on, about a year or two later, you can't text somebody unless you have their cell number.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So here I was today trying to text somebody in this place that I had nobody's cell number. Did you get a text, by the way, from your assistant?
No,
I called her. I called her. She said she would text you.
Well, I didn't have my phone.
I got a collaborative text. I got your regular numbers, but I don't have a cell number. You can't text anybody today if you don't have the blast.
Well, you mean you are less...
Oh, yeah.
Tech than I am?
Probably.
Wow.
Yeah. That's right, Bob. That is right.
That is scary, isn't it?
It is.
I love this guy, man.
You're the one who did it, you got me. I think I was coming up the elevator.
Well, do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay, and it passes, I'm sure. Thank you very much, and we appreciate your patience.
All right.
I'm
sorry.